At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
This public radio podcast is supported by Constellation Energy, a global provider of fuels, power, and energy services, committed to environmentally sound, energy efficient, and sustainable energy solutions. Constellation Energy, the way energy works. And by Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937, Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Kind of nice to have had a calm week, wasn't it? No banks going under, no stock market hysteria. But you know what? It's the things you don't see that always get you. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Advanta. Advanta salutes small business, the brave ones, the risk takers, all those who chase a dream and make their own way. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Happy Friday, everybody. It is March 28th today. Good to have you here. You know, the government supplies a fairly steady trickle of economic indicators, so steady that, to be honest, sometimes they slip by without much notice. There was one this morning, though, that should not go unmentioned. It's a little thing economists call personal consumption. How much consumers are spending is a better way to say that. Up just a 0.1% last month, the weakest in a year and a half. The dilemma here is, how's the economy going to grow if nobody's spending any money, right? Well, here's another indicator along the same lines, but a little bit bigger. Clear Channel Communications. It's the biggest radio company in the country. It was supposed to have been bought out by a couple of private equity firms this month for more than $20 billion. Yeah, you know where this is going. The deal's been on the rocks all week thanks to the credit markets. And today, Clear Channel said the deal might collapse outright. From New York, Marketplace's Jill Barshe reports.
Six investment banks signed up last year to raise $22 billion to fund the Clear Channel buyout. Chris Donnelly is vice president at Standard & Poor's LCD. He says now the banks are dragging their heels at the 11th hour because they can't find investors to buy the debt.
The banks are estimating that they could lose as much as $3 billion just because there is no market in order to place this paper.
It's not just the debt market that's getting in the way of the deal. Tom Taylor tracks the radio industry at radioinfo.com. He says Clear Channel's buyers are worried about slower growth. They may be looking for a way out of the deal, too. Taylor admits radio isn't growing like it used to, but he says Clear Channel's business is healthy.
Radio remains very profitable. Radio station margins, what they call cash flow margins, in large markets are often 40, 45, 50, even 60%, which is an amazing number.
Clear Channel's buyers protest the banks have already agreed to the terms of the deal. Donnelly says if the banks pull out now, that could destroy trust in the financial markets.
It creates a precedent that throws the entire private equity landscape into chaos.
Both the buyers and the banks are suing each other. It's now up to the judges to decide whether the deal goes through or not. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
Part of the frozen credit market is a kind of bond called auction rate securities. I'll mercifully spare you the technical details here. I'll just tell you that they used to be good, now they've gone bad. Today, the Wall Street Journal pointed out that that has trapped some unfamiliar customers in the liquidity squeeze. Technology firms haven't traditionally done much in debt markets because they've always had plenty of cash. So we asked Ashley Milne-Tite whether the credit crunch might now catch other companies unawares, too.
Analysts say it's likely companies right across the economy have bought into the $330 billion auction rate bond market. But no one knows how exposed different firms are. Joseph Ficera is CEO of Sabre Partners in New York.
One of the big problems with this market has been a lack of transparency in terms of tracking both the issuance and auctions that took place and the ownership of them. And it's why this information has been trickling out in the quarterly statements.
Software, retail, and manufacturing companies all bought these bonds, says securities lawyer Jacob Zamansky. He says because they can't sell them now, it's affecting the way they do business.
A lot of companies are having to change their plans. You know, they may at some point have to lay off workers.
Individual investors are feeling duped too, says Peter Cohen, who runs a management consulting firm. He's heard from hundreds of angry investors.
People who have their money with these brokerage firms and the auction rate securities are now determined to remove all of their investments from these firms, and they're looking for a place where they can avoid this problem.
He says, like corporate investors, they want to get their money out as fast as possible, but until the market unfreezes, they can't. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
A firm called the Campaign Media Analysis Group figures that so far this cycle, $210 million worth of political ads have made it to air. Most were from the campaigns themselves. About a third came from outside groups. Not a whole lot from individuals, which is where this next story comes in. A website debuted this week that lets anybody make their own campaign ads for any candidate and then actually get them on TV. Jeremy Hobson has more now on VoterVoter.com.
If you want to give money to a presidential candidate, you have to abide by federal limits, $2,300 per candidate per election. But if you want to make an ad for the candidate with your own message, you can spend as much as you want. Here's VoterVoter CEO Eric Mathewson.
Your freedom of speech rights and the FEC laws surrounding an independent expenditure do not limit you in how much money you can spend and your ability to broadcast a message.
So as long as I or VoterVoter.com file the complex paperwork, I can make an ad and just pay to run it as much as I want? How about this one?
The senator should be ashamed of himself. And if you vote for him, you should be ashamed too.
We would be willing to present a controversial ad to a television station and see whether or not they're willing to run it.
And therein lies the catch. While I could theoretically get that ad on the air for just $175 in, say, Erie, Pennsylvania, TV stations could turn down my ad since I'm not a registered federal candidate for office. And so, says Evan Tracy of the Campaign Media Analysis Group,
the party that will have the most control over how much of this advertising we see in this election cycle will ultimately be the television stations themselves.
But VoterVoter is owned by ad software company Wide Orbit, which does business with 950 TV stations across the country. It hopes that will help get the ads on the air. VoterVoter plans to make its money with a standard 15% commission. In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
VoterVoter, pizza, pizza. A slowish end to a sluggish week. Come on, you were thinking it too. We'll have the details in a chat with a stockbroker from Dallas when we do the numbers. President Robert Mugabe sent troops out onto the streets of Zimbabwe today. Army officials say they're ready to put a stop to any protests that might erupt during presidential elections this weekend. Mugabe's been in power for 28 years, decades that have seen Zimbabwe gutted economically. Inflation is rampant, and Zimbabwe's gone from being a net food exporting country to one where non-governmental organizations say there is a food crisis. All of that will play into Sunday's elections. Gretchen Wilson covers Africa for us. Gretchen, the inflation story in Zimbabwe is pretty well known, but how has that economic crisis affected the food market?
The inflation and the nature of food production in Zimbabwe both contribute. As you know, inflation is topping more than 100,000% a year. And so, for example, on the black market a year ago, you could get 12,000 Zimbabwean dollars for just one U.S. dollar. Today, that same U.S. dollar would buy you 50 million Zimbabwean dollars. So right now, a carton of milk, at least $85 million. At the same time, there's a subsistence farming culture. But because of ongoing cycles of drought and floods, plus a total lack of seeds and fertilizer, it's really meant a poor harvest year on year.
President Robert Mugabe has been accused of using food as a political weapon in this election cycle, of using state-subsidized food resources to improve his chances of winning this election. What can you tell us about that?
What's happening is supporters or even perceived supporters of opposition candidates are going to the state-run grain marketing board where the food is sold at subsidized rates, and they're being turned away from collecting that food. Human Rights Watch alone said that it found more than 20 incidences of that kind of control, and it's using kind of food and also farming equipment to gain political advantage for the ruling party.
How does this affect daily life? I mean, are people eating at all?
Well, people have come up with some serious coping mechanisms to try to survive. They're growing food wherever they can. You know, you drive around Zimbabwe and you find people trying to grow corn on highway medians and other places where they can find soil, trying to protect it from people who are going to try to come collect it in the middle of the night. They're relying on imported food from neighboring countries, from South Africa, from Malawi, from Zambia. And it's also, you know, many people are turning to very cheap and pretty disgusting kinds of foods. People are using, like, non-dairy creamer and mixing it with a lot of water and calling that milk.
What might happen depending on the way this election turns out this weekend? How's that going to change the food crisis?
I think what's going to happen is that, you know, there's going to be a lot of uncertainty. Opposition activists wonder whether or not there's going to be a runoff. If there's someone who doesn't get more than 51% of the vote, by law will need to be a runoff, and that's going to create a lot of insecurity in the country. And I think a lot of hoarding of food, a lot of increased inflation, and I think a lot of people are going to be really in crisis mode. And most people will say that they desperately want things to change, but they really have little faith that this election will be that turning point.
It sounds like this use of food as a political weapon by Mugabe's party might not be working all that well if the prospects are in doubt.
His prospects are in doubt, but because of the fact that so many people are concerned about getting their next meal, they're not going to be voting with their hearts and minds, but rather with their stomachs.
Gretchen Wilson reports on Africa for us from South Africa. Gretchen, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Currency markets were kind to the dollar today. The greenback mostly held its own against the euro and the Japanese yen, despite some of those weak economic indicators I mentioned earlier. Confidence in the dollar overseas is generally shaky, which is pretty much the same way the rest of the world feels about the U.S. economy, pain that has been spread abroad by Wall Street's excesses in subprimes. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports now on America's least popular export.
I'm sitting in the lobby of one of Britain's most successful private equity firms. It's very quiet in here. This is hardly a hive of takeover activity. There's only the occasional phone call.
Good afternoon, Alchemy.
Alchemy is named jokily after the medieval attempt to turn base metals into gold. The more recent magic of leverage isn't working any better. The boss, John Moulton, admits the huge bank loans of yesteryear that helped build his $4 billion business have vanished.
We had one of the major UK banks in here yesterday. Last year, if we'd asked them for less than $100 million, we would have had our virility in question. This year, sorry, we can't do more than $20 million. And they look really quite pathetic as they say it.
Save your love, my darling, save your love.
How times have changed. Before the credit crunch, the banks not only bombarded private equity firms with cash, consumers were pummeled too. The airwaves were awash with credit card ads.
0% interest, low APR, and cash back on purchases. You get so much more with a Mint card, Steve.
Now the Brits are deeper in debt than even the Americans, says Moulton.
Our consumers are loaded up to the armpits with debt, typically about 20% more than the average US consumer. And the cutting off of fresh credit for consumer loans is one of the ways that the economy is slowing down here.
Conditions are still more buoyant here than in the US, but in London there are signs the decade-long consumer boom is drawing to an end.
Can I ask you, are you cutting back because of the credit crunch?
Well, yes, I suppose, yes, we all are, yes. Because we don't want to be left with a huge debt and lose everything.
Yeah. What about you? Are you cutting back too?
Yes, I am a bit, yes, having to be careful.
Well, I haven't started cutting back yet, but I'm sure I will.
As in the US, the main engine of Britain's consumer boom has been housing, fuelled by cheap finance. Now, says mortgage broker Roy Bulger, the banks are pushing up mortgage rates in order to repel customers.
So we're in an old market at the moment. Lenders are trying to make themselves sufficiently uncompetitive to avoid writing too much business, which they actually don't have the funds to lend.
And house prices are beginning to fall.
Still pay 10, 30, 21.7.
London's financial centre is still thriving, but if it falters, the entire economy could be in trouble. John Moulton, the alchemist, says finance is the UK's only world-beating industry.
If we lose our financial services businesses because of lack of confidence in the banks, it really will hurt the UK. So in many ways, we're more vulnerable than the US because we're so much weaker outside of financial services.
London's office building boom has already subsided on fears that banks and brokerages will soon shed staff. Work is still underway here on this five-storey building in the financial district, but little comfort there. The main tenant was supposed to be Bear Stearns. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Time to check the week on Wall Street with stockbroker, business analyst, and general man about town, David Johnson. How are you?
I'm well, Kai Rizdahl. Doing well. So let me ask you a riddle. Do you know what happens in 6.5 hours?
No.
Well, 6.5 trading hours.
Yes, what?
First quarter's over.
Oh, yeah. Good for you.
There will be nobody throwing a little party, say, gosh, we're going to miss the good old first
Monday
quarter.
Could be a really big day. You never know.
Yeah, and that may be what's driving some of the trading we've seen here the last couple of days. You know, this volume today was one of the lightest trading days we've had this year. Nobody wanted to do anything, and it was just in the final hour, everybody said, oh, what the heck, let's just sell. And that's what they did yesterday.
You know why, though?
I don't know why.
Because it's just been boring.
It is boring. But well, you know, you say that. Then on the other hand, you know, given a different environment, this could have just been a heart stopper. JCPenney, the big respected retailer, came out today and said, hey, our earnings aren't going to be 75, 80 cents. They're probably going to be half a buck because we threw an Easter and nobody showed up. And the stock was down $3. But it didn't really kill the rest of the market. It hurt the retailers. The deal you guys were talking about, that Clear Channel
deal. Yeah, exactly.
Deal, you know, the implication is well beyond just that $19 billion deal. If the nation's banks aren't showing up to finance deals, that whole business, you know, slows to a crawl and nobody ever gets bought out again. And that's bad for us.
So here we have the sad David Johnson again, right?
Well, no. I'm really still pleased. I mean, I think, by and large, I think this was a good week. I think the Dow and the S&P were down about 1%. NASDAQ was up a little bit.
I know this is sort of oxymoronic talking to a stockbroker, but let's forget about the stock market here for a second and just talk about some of the ancillary stuff, right? Still nobody trusts anybody. Still consumers are sad. I mean, come on.
Well, and I don't know about this riddle, and I'm glad I'm not an economist, but I kind of wish I were sometimes. On the one hand, you know, we're beginning to see signs that people are doing what they have to do to make things right.
Define your terms here, yeah.
Well, J.C. Penney reporting the, you know, everybody wore their old two-year-old Easter frock. and nobody bought any new stuff. Well, you got to do that. I mean, it has to slow down. Did you see these energy numbers? I was just astounded.
No, which ones?
Well, the EIA, this Department of Energy outfit that puts out numbers, said gasoline use in the month of January was the lowest in over 3 years. Oil demand, the lowest in August of 2005. I just got off the phone a few minutes ago with a refiner that I was talking to, and that had told me this a couple of months ago, that this thing was slowing down. He said it's still slowing down. So maybe that'll bring down energy prices, which will even out the economy.
So $110 a barrel and $3.50 a gallon is where we start feeling the pain, right?
Yes, evidently so. And a lot of it. And we start staying home. But that's not a bad thing.
David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. Homeward bound, I imagine he is. David, we'll see you next week.
Yes. All right.
Coming up, cleaning up dirty business down south.
The assumption in Louisiana ethics laws for over 40 years has been a wink and a nod.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials dropped 0.7%, 86 points today, closed at 12,216. The NASDAQ declined 0.8%, 19 points to 2261. The S&P 500 slid 0.8%, 10 points, ended the day at 1315. For the week that was, as Mr. Johnson says, the Dow tumbled 0.1%, the NASDAQ inched up 0.1%, the S&P 500 off 8%. About that penny's profit warning, the retailer expects first quarter earnings to be far weaker than expected, like 35 to 40% weaker. Its shares rang up a 7.5% loss. Merrill Lynch was anything but bullish. The investment firm was down 4.75% today. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.44%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by SaveAndInvest.org, helping military service members and families manage their money with confidence. Online at SaveAndInvest.org. Whether you're busy or lounging around, the economic gears are always turning. Marketplace is available around the clock, too, as a podcast. Get your financial fix whenever you want it. Download the show and take it with you. Just head over to our website at marketplace.org and click on podcasts.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at the events for Monday. President Bush leaves for the Ukraine. There he will meet with Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko to discuss economic ties between the two countries. The American Legion holds its 48th annual conference. It opens with a joint session of the National Security and Foreign Relations Commission. And it's Al Gore's birthday. The nation's 45th vice president turns the big 6-0. I'm Megan Larson.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is often cheaper, as we've all heard, to outsource, hire contractors to cut costs. Companies do it. Governments do it. The Pentagon, too, in Iraq especially. But this week, federal auditors said the Defense Department counts on those contractors too much right here at home. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Ganser has more.
The GAO report focused on an Army office that's in charge of procurement for 125 divisions of the Pentagon. It's called the Contracting Center of Excellence. But the GAO findings weren't all that excellent. The report says 42% of the center's procurement specialists are contractors. Now, that's important because procurement specialists help decide which companies get government contracts.
It's a good example of the fox being in charge of the chicken coop and keeping charge of how many chickens are in there and what they get to do.
That's Winslow Wheeler of the Center for Defense Information. He says a company called CACI International is at the top of the pecking order. It's one of the biggest government contracting firms around, and almost all of the procurement contractors the GAO found worked for that company. The report says CACI contractors are almost 27% more expensive than government employees, and they're sitting right next to federal workers. They just wear a different colored badge. John Hutton wrote the report.
We found that when contractors at times worked on documents, it wasn't clear that it was prepared by a contractor.
CACI declined our interview request, but did state that it provides the Pentagon with good value. Hutton says Congress should look into that. Winslow Wheeler says Congress will hold hearings, all right.
And they'll all tut-tut and poo-poo and they'll write press releases, and they will proceed to do nothing meaningful about it.
The Pentagon says it recognizes there's a problem with hiring contractors, but it says there aren't enough qualified government workers to go around. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman was released from a federal prison in Louisiana today. Siegelman's out on bond while he appeals his conviction for bribery-related corruption. Native Louisiana politicians are going to have to start towing the straight and narrow themselves soon. A new set of ethics laws goes into effect on Sunday. The Bayou State has a long history of questionable relationships between businessmen and politicians, but Kate Archer Kent from Red River Radio reports that the new governor is trying to change that.
When it comes to doing business in Louisiana, people tend to think about one thing, and Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal doesn't shy away from it.
When you talk to business leaders, the number one thing they'd bring up over and over is we love Louisiana, we love the ports, the resources, the people, but we don't want to have to hire somebody's brother-in-law. We don't want to have to know the right person to do business. Who you know should not be more important than what you know when it comes to doing business in Louisiana.
Under the new laws, elected officials won't be able to bid on state contracts. Lobbyists won't be able to court lawmakers with lavish meals and free tickets, among other reforms. Baton Rouge businessman Sean Riley fought for these laws. He's chief operating officer at Lamar Advertising, Louisiana's only NASDAQ 100 company. He says corruption isn't just a Louisiana problem.
Louisiana's not the only place where you can get home cooked. In the business I'm in, I have been home-cooked in other states. I know what it's like. And I know what I feel like. I know what I feel like when I feel like it wasn't a fair shake.
But like the governor, Riley realizes that Louisiana still has to do something decisive about its image problem if it's to attract business. His aim? To make the state as transparent as any public company. The reforms are already making some firms think twice about leaving Louisiana. Dean Taylor is CEO of Tidewater, a New Orleans-based shipbuilding company. He had to move some of his executives to Houston after Katrina, and he says he prefers that city's business climate. He was all set to move the entire company, but he wants to give Louisiana a chance.
I've told everyone, including Governor Jindal, that our decision is not forever. It's a decision that we will revisit. And we'll revisit it in view of what progress we perceive the state making in making the business environment more friendly.
But it's not just corruption that makes businesses balk at Louisiana. Elliot Stonecipher, a demographer and political analyst, he cites the state's untrained workforce, failing schools, brain drain, and Hurricane Katrina blight. Ethics reform, he says, is one step on a very long road.
If it's a CEO who's trying to decide whether or not to build a plant, bring a company here with a bunch of jobs, and that's what we were told this was all about, they are not about to decide, in my opinion, and based on anything we've been able to read, oh, okay, now we can see that Louisiana's changing. It's going to be a much better atmosphere.
Stonecipher's a keen student of Louisiana history, and he's not entirely confident Governor Jindal's reforms will even be enforced.
The assumption in Louisiana ethics laws for over 40 years has been a wink and a nod.
Lawmakers are already tinkering with the reforms. When the legislature convenes Monday, they'll consider changes that should clarify the laws. Governor Jindal says he's confident his reforms won't be watered down in the process. I'm Kate Archer-Kent for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering more of what you want in a retirement plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note to wrap things up today, J.P. Morgan seems to have weathered the credit crisis just fine, but an internal memo published this week by the Oregonian newspaper reveals it might have been up to the same tricks as everybody else was. The memo outlines step-by-step instructions for making unqualified mortgage applicants appear qualified. you know, simple stuff like inflating their salaries. Speaking of salaries, Bank of America has agreed to pay former Countrywide President David Sample $28 million to run its consumer mortgage shop. B of A, you might remember, bought Countrywide earlier this year after the mortgage crisis brought Countrywide to its knees. That $28 million, by the way, almost 40% more than the guy who Sample works for, B of A CEO Ken Lewis, made last year himself. And that is Marketplace on this Friday afternoon from American Public Media. Today, the Dow dipped 86 points, 0.7%. The NASDAQ nudged down 19 points, 0.8%. The S&P 500 slumped 10 points, also 0.8%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste West, and the executive producer is JJ Yore. On Monday, rocky times for some U.S. farmers.
Every day I look at that the fuel or diesel fuel in the gas stations, and I'm thinking, man, I should have pulled that trigger 6 weeks ago.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.